There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, hello. It's another episode of Is It Just Me? The podcast that puts the frankly ludicrous sometimes topics front and center and gives them the importance that they deserve and the respect, James Williams.
Hello, everyone.
And I'm Jo Elvin. I'm the other one. It isn't just us, thank God. Today we are joined by the amazing food writer and broadcaster and purveyor of fine raspberry-baked cookie treats. It's Miss Rachel Koo.
Yay!
How are you?
I'm good, thank you, considering I only had 5 hours sleep.
You look amazing on it.
Well, and you managed to bake, because Rachel has brought us into biscuits already. She's our favourite guest ever. She brought us food.
Did you swerve into Waitrose and dust them up a little bit?
They would look better if they were from Waitrose.
So you've literally arrived this morning from Sweden.
Last night, but I got locked out my flat, didn't get into the flat till midnight, and then I had to get up at 5 because I had a 6 a.m. interview.
And you're still here on time. And she brought biscuits.
She's a pro.
Well, it's important, no?
Oh, yes. Well, it's very exciting because you've got a new book out this week.
I do indeed. It's been 3 years. So The Little Swedish Kitchen, I'm quite nervous about this.
Why?
Because this is the first book which doesn't have a TV show to accompany it. And
it's had two amazing features in a little magazine I know.
I know.
You magazine.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Beautiful features that I feel fortunate.
You're done. You're set.
I know. Yeah. Jamie Oliver, forget it. You're going to be on the no selling list.
I actually went to Jamie Oliver's offices the other day.
Oh, did you?
It's a really nice setup up there.
Very I know, nice. Yeah. I know. It's very fancy. Yeah. Mm.
I'm not anyway, enough of that, Jamie Oliver,
anyway.
Guys. So I guess that is nervous. But what I love is, there's obviously a bit of, you know, fusion, because we had the Little French Kitchen. Mm. Do you just like little kitchens, basically?
I do like little kitchens, but for me, it's more the mentality that you can have whatever space you have, whether it's small or big or whatever equipment, you can still cook delicious food. And I always look at food at way you write recipes that are approachable and accessible. And doesn't matter what background, what you like to do, it's, you know, the food is there to enjoy. It should be a pleasure. And that's what that's my mission when I write cookbooks.
And so obviously this, I'm guessing, is a sort of change of pace and change of flavour in terms of obviously it's now embracing Swedish food, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I moved to Sweden several years ago because I met a Swede. Not the vegetable kind.
Yeah. Probably a very handsome kind. I find Swedish people tend to be...
There's no ugly ones.
No, they're very good looking, aren't they?
And the kids, oh my goodness. Yeah, if you ever get on the bus...
You've done well there. Yeah.
Beautiful children. So yes, I've been living in Sweden. I've been trying to learn the language.
Is it difficult?
So I speak German and French. So this is language number 4. So I think it has
She's such
helped.
An underachiever, isn't
God,
she?
It's really impressive. And you probably speak Australian as well, don't you? I've been out there many a time.
So you met a Swede, but were you familiar with Sweden before you moved there?
Not really. So it was... like eye-opening, and especially when you move to another country, it's how do you discover a new place, you know, how do you integrate into society? Because when you're a foreigner, you very much live in a bubble, especially if you're just visiting and
you don't speak the language.
Yes. Although I must say, Sweden in comparison to France, everybody speaks English, whereas in France, like tu sais quoi, je ne comprends pas.
It does make us terribly lazy.
How dare what you just said.
It's all about the look and the nasal thing, and then you've got French down. So when I first moved to Paris, I just spoke English with a French accent, and it worked.
Joey Tribbiani, French language.
But we are very like, well, you know, it's that weird sort of, we do go anywhere in the world, and pretty much everyone does speak English. It does make us slightly lazy, doesn't it? But, I mean, you know, but good for you, you're still trying to learn the language.
I am. I'm struggling. I speak at a level of a two-year-old.
And the thing is, when you read a language like Swedish, you can't even work out what the words might be. You can kind of, with Italian and French, sort of, they're very similar to their English counterparts a lot of the time.
Yes.
Or at least you could find a Spanish-French... Exactly,
because that's the Latin, the Romans obviously influence, whereas Swedish has the Germanic roots, so it's slightly different in the way it's built. But that's where my German has helped a lot, I think.
And is it Lingophone, or are you going to school?
No, Duolingo app.
That's what people keep telling me about this, and I'm just too lazy to try it.
You just 5 minutes every day. It's the idea. You just do 5 minutes every day and build up. But obviously, I took a few lessons, and then all my Swedish relatives, like the older ones who live in the countryside, they're the ones who like really sit you down and have patience to correct you
Correct you in a nice way.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's a bit of dual things. You've been discovering the language and then the food at the same time.
Yes. A bit of everything.
See, I mean, obviously, being an adopted Brit, I just think of IKEA's meatballs. That's all I think about.
Yeah, well, that's understandable, because even my relatives in Singapore, they went to IKEA to eat the meatballs.
Really?
It's nuts.
That lingonberry, is it lingon?
You have lingonberry jam with it, and mashed potatoes and pickled.
Is that very Swedish?
Oh my gosh. Even at kindergarten, they eat meatballs every week.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And what else? What is archetypal Swedish food?
It's all the pickled food, the brine food, the preserved
fish.
Food. Yeah, fish. A lot of. I mean, the seafood on the west coast is amazing. You know, you've got all the shellfish.
But they love a really fishy, salty herring, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So down with that.
I think that I could really tell by the tone of your voice. You won't be on board.
Meatballs.
But then they have the slightly milder with a creamy sauce and dill and
but
lemon.
But I love dill.
I love dill too. Yeah. Some people hate dill. I love dill.
It's that slight aniseed note. Oh, some people
I think
are not
it's divine.
Is there lots of sort of gravlax and for cured
meat? Yes, a lot of cured
fish. Is it cured meat or cured fish?
Cured fish.
So not so cured meat.
Gravlax, because I now speak a little bit of Swedish, grav means to bury, and you bury the salmon in salt and sugar, and that's how you cure it. So you're burying lax is salmon. So that's where the gravlax comes from.
And it's a relatively...
We're always learning.
I know. Yeah. And isn't it quite a relatively healthy way of living? Isn't
yes,
it?
Yeah, I mean, they have... Diet. Like last year, there was this big trend after hygge, the Danish word, there was lagom, which is a Swedish word for balance. Or, there's not a real translation, but that's the easiest way to translate it. So it's how you could say, oh, that's really lagom. So it's like Goldilocks porridge. It's just right.
Right.
And so your life should be lagom. You know, not too stressful, not too laid back, just right. You know, dinner should be lagom. Or like your eating way, you should enjoy, you know, sweet treats, but then have something wholesome. Kind of balance it out.
Because I don't think of like Sweden being, what would be a Swedish dessert?
Well, they're more fika, the coffee and bun culture. They love their cinnamon buns, the cardamom
That's
buns.
That's the other thing I like in IKEA, just the frozen
the buns,
cinnamon danishes.
Yeah.
I love you bringing it all back to IKEA.
Maybe we should have been sponsored by IKEA.
But I do, I whiz around the hellhole of the crowds to get to the food bit after the tills.
I mean, you had hot dogs last week.
No, true.
That's really Swedish, eating hot dogs.
not ones out of the microwave, vegetarian style, in a fit of absolute despair on which those particular hot dogs were eaten. They were good.
Yeah.
But tell me, I'm always fascinated. Chefs, cooks, what do you do? Do you have food hell, or do you just have to kind of like everything somehow when
No, I have food for a living. Food hell. I did a lot of food hell writing this cookbook. My husband said, oh my goodness, how can you cook like that? He said, at one point he said, are you really a cook? I did some really bad things. I was trying to make a really interesting cabbage soup.
I was going to say
no, that's an Everest right there, isn't it?
Interesting and cabbage in the same phrase.
Did it make it into the book?
No, it didn't make it into the book. It was, yeah, that's where my husband questioned that I write cookbooks.
That's amazing. But when I watch MasterChef and they're just sort of like chuffing down every, and like for a start, you know, we've already talked about I can't eat shellfish, I'm allergic. What do you do if you're a chef and you're supposed to be able to taste everything? And
you kind of push it to the side. I mean, yeah. I was filming this show in Australia when I was 4 months pregnant, and it was a dessert show, and I wanted to avoid the meringue and the egg whites, which weren't cooked, so I would just like pick out the bit which was cooked and stuff like that. There's a trick to like.
But is there something you really just can't?
I'm not a big fan of foie gras.
Oh, yeah. And for someone who lived in France, almost like a heretic.
Exactly. And then Swedish surströmming, which is the herring in the tin, which is fermented, and the tin bulges from the gases.
I mean, well, that sounds gross. You just said the words herring, fermented, and bulging. Gas. I mean, that's...
And gases. I don't like those sort of Germany sausages that look like someone's already eaten them. And they're just sort of like...
The Weisswurst?
Like, yeah, like all the things are like made up of like different components of meat. It looks like someone chewed it, spat it out, and then rolled it into a sausage.
Mm.
Not having it.
You're reselling that one.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, starved to death before I put that in my mouth.
So if we were going to... What do you think would be your hero recipes from this? I think I told you, Rachel, when we booked you to come on the show, I once made your chocolate mousse for my family, and they still talk about it to this day. So what would you say is like your hero recipe from the new book, or the ones you're really enjoying making yourself at the moment?
So there's one recipe, and it's funny, because it's cabbage related. Because what
Stop
I love about...
That cabbage.
I know. Cabbage happened.
Yeah, yeah, but what I love about Swedish food...
in a cabbage farm.
I should have. Yeah. I should have. Yeah. Maybe I am going to start a cabbage company. But it's Swedish food, its history is you don't have a huge amount of produce because of where it's lying geographically. So you had to be creative with what you had. So root vegetables, potatoes, cabbage. And people tend to overcook cabbage, and it's always boiled, it's always horrible. So I do this, you slice a wedge of cabbage, you douse it in butter, you grill it so it's charred, so it goes caramelized, bit of, you know, like a mustard vinaigrette on it. So you have this charred on the outside, but slightly crunchy inside. So it's like a twist on a slaw, but it's got this complex flavor, but it's very easy to do because you're just charring the cabbage, and you kind of...
I'm here for that.
I'm going to say, she's won me over.
Yeah, totally.
I think that sounds gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're right. I think it all comes down to, and I think British people are very bad for this. We, you know, we put our, like, Christmas veg on 2 weeks before, don't we?
Oh my goodness. We are
the kings of overcooking things.
The Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think a lot of veg in particular get a very bad rep because they've just been prepared really badly.
And you grow up thinking you hate broccoli or Brussels sprouts because you had the completely sort of like murdered version in your school dinners.
Exactly.
Yes,
that's
exactly
what I'm finding with my daughter.
Yeah.
Right,
well. But then I have the one recipe which you're like, because if you go to IKEA and you get the buns, so if you always have any of those leftover buns, you slice it in half and then you line a bowl. You make a salted caramel sauce spiked with cardamom.
Holy
and
shit.
And you fold it into like a tub of vanilla ice cream, stuff it on top, then you let it freeze, and then you pour the rest of the caramel sauce on top, and then you have like a cardamom bun bum.
And then you just...
I think Joe's about to pass out.
And just stick your head in that and remain there for 7 days. Yeah.
Booking a very large nap.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. You will need a nap. But that's like a really simple way.
I might even have to put the curry pants on for those.
Yeah. I mean, it's already sounding amazing. So basically, the book is The Little Swedish Kitchen. It's available right now. So for all other kinds of... I mean, there are some lighter things, I'm imagining.
It's a whole range. It's divided into seasons, starters, mains, desserts, for quick dinners, or like entertaining friends. It's got everything in there.
And super easy cakes that don't look like you've made them in a super easy way.
Yeah, so like my wedding cake is in there.
I think we had a lot of emails over the weekend about that piece and how much people loved
that. Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
So, I mean, your actual wedding cake from your actual wedding?
Yes. So, I mean, if you get married and you're a baker traditionally, you can't...
The pressure.
you can't have somebody else make your cake, no? I don't know. I felt like I had to make my own cake. So I developed this yogurt cake recipe, which you can make in advance, freeze it, made lemon curd, and then on the day it was a cream cheese like frosting, and I had my assistant who finished it off.
I was about to say, I love the idea that there you are on your wedding day worrying about your cream cheese frosting. Were you dressed at this point in the wedding dress?
No, I was like, I assembled it. I had everything listed exactly, and she was briefed so on how to do it.
Also,
so,
I have to say, I'm actually salivating while doing this podcast. It's not ideal for radio or audio, I have to say. So we might stop talking about food, or otherwise I'm going to be drooling.
No, we're not going to stop talking about food. We're going straight into... a real bugbear of mine. Okay. Is it just me?
Are you ready for the first topic then, Rachel?
I am indeed.
Okay, let's do this.
Is it just me who would make bananas illegal? I hate those bastards. I hate the way they look. I particularly hate the way they look when they're being eaten. I really despise the way they look when they're being eaten in public on public transport. I think they smell... there's something about them that just turns my stomach. And then I just kind of feel really strongly that people should not eat bananas in public spaces, particularly on trains. They make the whole thing smell. And then quite often, then people leave their disgusting, ugly banana peel and litter with it as well.
Somebody left a banana skin in my gym yesterday. Just literally lying on a bit of equipment.
I am not joking. I don't think I could ever go back to that gym. That's how much I hate bananas.
It's a funny thing because Joe and I used to work with somebody, a girl called Corrie. Hi, Corrie, for listening. She lives in America
Corrie.
Now.
I bet she does listen. If she doesn't, we'll have words.
She better be listening.
Yeah.
But Corrie is genuinely terrified of bananas. Like, and when she was the first person
bananaphobic.
But she's a bananaphobe. Honestly, if you wave a banana skin at this girl, she will run screaming and crying from the room. Like, so I think you're going to hit a bit of a sore point here, because I think there's lots of people out there that really hate bananas.
They just disgust me, like, more than anything I can think of. I don't know. Well, to be honest with you, I'm a bit funny about a lot of fruit.
Yeah.
There's something about the sweet smell. Like, for instance, growing up in summers in Australia, my family's fridge was always full of, I don't know, I think it's, is it called rock melon here?
Oh,
the
yes.
The orange one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, that stuff stinks. And I think it looks disgusting. It's that borderline sweet / rotting smell of fruit that I cannot handle it. The only fruits that I really don't mind are berries. But even them, if they're super ripe, I don't want them in my fridge.
So you're anti-fruitarian.
Yeah,
but are you,
I guess so.
But do you, some people aren't fans of eggs.
Am I a weirdo?
Well, no, I was going to ask you, because do you hate bananas in every form? Like, would you eat banana bread, for example?
Yeah, I probably would if I hadn't had to sort of like heave my way through preparing it.
Right, but it's something gave you a slice of it.
And it's been cooked, and it's almost like, I guess it's the equivalent of the people who don't want to know where their leg of lamb came from. As long as it's sort of like, it's eaten and it's there.
Well, no, but even some people, they don't like eggs, but they eat ice cream and custard. Do you know what I mean? I think it depends on the form you find it in. I mean, to be honest, I've always been a massive fan of bananas. I'm a big fan of fruit. I mean, sadly, I can't have them anymore because I've been diagnosed as pre-diabetic, so I've got too much sugar in my blood, so I can't have them anymore.
You don't need those evil bastards banana.
Well, exactly.
Clogging up your arteries.
And they are the worst for us pre-diabetics.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I will say, before that, I was a big fan of them. I
think they're fantastic.
Well, I do.
Well, as a mum of a toddler, it's the easiest snack on the go. Like, super simple. You can't go wrong with a banana.
Also, I used to make Nana ice cream, which is blew my mind when I made that for the first time.
You say that about you can't go wrong with a banana and a toddler, but...
you've got a story, haven't you?
Well, I mean, Evie was about 18 months old and sitting in a high chair. You know that thing when you're trying to multitask, when you're sort of like, you know, even making a cup of tea is a huge Everest-like feat when you're looking at all eyes on a toddler. Sat her in a high chair. She was hungry. I cut up a banana into little slices. Look, brilliant. She's going to do that while I wash the dishes. That's fantastic. I had my back turned for about 20 seconds. And when I looked around it again, she individually shoved every single piece of that banana into her face at once. And so me, bananaphobe, having suffered through de-skinning, chopping up, dealing with the smell, my kid was going to choke. So I had to then fish out with my fingers all of that slightly mashed banana before it all went down the wrong way.
You're almost putting me off them now.
I hate bananas. I mean, what source of many misery of mine.
It's weird, though, isn't it? I mean, there are not that many foods that really set my teeth on edge. I mean, the one thing I really can't stand, and I hate myself for not being able to eat them, is oysters. Because people love them, and they feel so decadent, and they're just such
but
a treat.
But another thing that looks like someone's already eaten them.
Well, I interviewed Kerry-Sim Katatonia, one of my first jobs at Top of the Pops, and she once said to me that oysters are basically phlegm in a posh ashtray.
I agree.
And I literally, that has stuck with me forever. And I just, but to be honest, I wasn't a fan of them before then either. And I just don't know why. I can't, I think it's more of a texture thing. I think that's what you've got with banana.
Yeah.
It's more
it's the smell and the texture.
And the idea with oysters particularly, it's like that it's still alive going down your throat.
Yeah. And I don't understand, if you don't chew it, what's the point?
Yeah, so.
Oh God, I actually did do a bit of a, oh God.
I mean, do you have like a food hell? Is there one thing you just cannot eat, Rachel?
I think I was filming this documentary for a BBC once, and we were in the jungle in Malaysia with their like tribes people, and they cooked me jungle rats like curry.
Wow,
actual rat?
No, it was squirrel.
Oh, okay.
It was a jungle squirrel.
Oh, that's all right then.
Yeah, which they, and it was a huge honour. You know, they like gone to a lot of. The thing is, when you cook squirrel, you skin it. It looks like a rat.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think it is. I quite often look at them in my garden and for a split second think it is a rat. And then you see the tail.
Yeah, exactly. And so they will...
But do they cook them whole?
Well, they chop it up in bits, but then they keep it all on the bone and they're stewing it and
like
they pull
the
heads.
Like the guinea pigs in South America where their little hands and feet are
the claws.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so I had to sit down and, you know, and... enjoy the meal in front on camera.
Honest to God, I would happily have that over a banana any day.
Really?
Any day.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, be my guest. Honestly. I'll do a swap with you.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say it, I think there's going to be people listening who are going to agree with you because I have a few friends, not to the extreme that our friend Corey, who's terrified of them, but lots of my friends are very anti-bananas and just don't like them. And I think you're right. I think it's more litter.
It's the antisocial fruit.
I feel like I'm going to go on a right old high horse here, but I just feel like the litter situation in this country is getting worse and worse. And actually, Rachel, I was going to ask you, as somebody who's lived, I bet you in Sweden, do you notice when you come back here that the litter situation is a lot worse?
I need to look hard.
Because I just think, I feel when I travel around the world, I do not see people just chucking things on the floor or, you know.
Depends where you go. When I was in Paris last month and... I got reminded about the
I think
dog.
They're a little bit more cavalier.
Oh, dog poo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's really...
But I mean, I mean like actual, like you said, like leaving a banana skin in a gym. Come on. That's... When is that?
That's the height of disrespect.
Also, if I was a gym manager, I would be on that CCTV, tracking down that member and literally threatening to bar them.
I think it's unforgivable.
Yes. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, look, if you are sat at home, you're literally doing an air punch saying, yes, Jo Elvin, she speaks my truth. I hate bananas too.
Or if you think I'm just mental, then just don't email.
Well, either way, do email us because we love reading them. Either way, the good and the bad. Yes, email
and you
us.
Do read them as well.
We do,
because I emailed.
Rachel emailed us and that's how she's come to be sat here right now. So we do read
every
email.
You're going to get all these emails from people who want to be on the show.
Check and see if Madonna's done it.
Yeah, Madonna keeps emailing. Yeah. Yeah. But yes, send us an email. We love reading them. It's isitjustmepodcast@gmail.com and listen out for a shout out on a future show.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Is it just me that gets told quite often, you look really familiar? I have a theory about this because I often believe that you either are a person who looks like a lot of people or you look very unique and very different and like you're very much yourself, because I have friends that never get this, but honestly, I will often be in a social situation and somebody, if I meet them for the first time, will say, have we met before? You look really familiar. Is there something weird, do you think, in just the breakup of some people's faces that means you tick more boxes and you've just got, based off, I've got a very common face.
I think I get that a lot. I'm sure it's just because my face is quite average and it just looks like so many other bits of other people. But whereas, well, Rachel, you're off the telly, so that's a different thing.
So I get a lot of tweets. People ask me, am I that actress from Game of Thrones?
Amelia Clarke.
That's a good one.
And then I remember when I was at art college, I had this guy who stalked me and he kept on saying, you look like Juliette Binoche. And I'm like, no.
These are all good gets. I'd be happy with that.
I want to firstly ask, would you ever go blonde?
I don't
know. And do a whole Khaleesi?
When I was an art student, I was a hair model and they cut my hair. It was a bit Alexander McQueen, where I got a weird like half haircut and dyed the bottom bit blonde and then it went green and blue. Yeah.
Well, I hope they paid you a good amount of money.
No, I didn't get
that.
Any
money.
I just got a free meal.
And
a free
this?
I have got some photos somewhere.
The beauty of being a student, where you would literally just suck that up for a meal.
Yeah, exactly. You're so broke when you're an art student, you know, and then I did some...
Just hair. Yeah.
I know, exactly. Yeah. I had even a pineapple haircut the once. It was like short, spiky at the top, and then like a little rat's tail on the side.
Wow.
Or was that, again, because somebody experimented on you?
Well, yeah, it was actually. Yeah.
I don't think
modeling.
You would have got a TV show in those days.
No, exactly. But yeah. I was on the cover of NME with that.
Oh, that is cool.
And really? I had to model for them, like, tossing a beer in the... And
I really want to see this.
I don't know where that picture is.
You've got to track it down on Instagram.
Like, I have to find it. But, yeah, I remember doing the shoot because I got on the tube smelling of beer. And I was like, they like put a real beer in there. And I was like,
were people like stepping away from you going, who's that lush?
Yeah, exactly. Especially it's like 3 PM. What's going on there?
She's living her best life. That's
also
living the dream.
I do now think you have to do Khaleesi for Halloween.
Maybe
you
should.
You need to do
that.
I think that could
Where
be
am I going to get my dragon from?
Yeah, that could be tricky.
Yeah.
You'll have to fashion one out of icing.
Okay, yeah. Like a little cake version.
Come on, you're up to it. Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, we've talked, I think, about like doppelgangers before, and I get, like I said, I think you are that person. I get told I look like lots of different people.
Mm.
And then I have some friends that are never told they look like anyone.
Well, so who's your celebrity lookalike?
Well, I've had everyone from Zoe Ball to Leonardo DiCaprio to Matt Damon to, like, you know, so I get a whole, you know, I get men, women, beasts.
I get Toni Collette.
Yes.
And I've been asked for Toni's autograph, particularly when I'm in Sydney.
I bet.
And since we've both got blonde highlights now, there. Well, I must admit, I've never really seen it, but then there was about a year ago, she was doing loads of publicity for a film with Drew Barrymore. It might have been a bit longer ago. And I, for a split second, looked at a picture of Toni Collette and Drew Barrymore and went, when did I meet Drew Barrymore? And then I remembered that it wasn't her. But then, and this is like being really, to the point where then I realised I've got a whole branch of relatives from my mother's father who she lost touch with. And I was like, even looking into, maybe Toni Collette and I are actually related.
Yeah.
Maybe he went and had this other secret family, but no.
No.
So, yeah.
I mean, have you ever like signed an autograph as somebody else?
No, I haven't actually. I should do that.
I always love like, those stories when you hear it. And I always love when they go, oh, well, I won't burst the bubble. I'll just sign it. The person
exactly.
Who
think
I am.
I was thinking, once at New York Fashion Week, when the third time I was asked if I would give an interview to Us Weekly.
Because
they thought I was Toni Collette. And also, the Australian accent much stronger in those days as well.
Yeah.
I did think I could really have some fun here. I could say some terrible things and they'd be attributed to Toni Collette. But I didn't. But yeah.
Missed out.
But no one ever says to you, you look really familiar. Then.
Because when I'm not out doing PR, filming that stuff, I can't be bothered with makeup.
But also, is that really embarrassing then if you want to say, because nobody wants to say, well, I'm off the telly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And but it depends who I'm talking to when I go into like...
But also, don't you find the whole fame thing has gone slightly different? Because obviously, there's this whole thing of being Insta famous, and you do have a huge audience. What do you? You've got like how many thousands of followers?
240,000.
That's a lot.
That's like millions.
That is a quarter of a million people.
Yeah, but that's not much in comparison to people who do a lot more than
but
me.
But it's huge. It's really hard to get a lot of followers on.
Yeah.
So like,
I still think that's quite a lot.
And I did buy them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the other thing.
Wow.
But do you get a lot of people who maybe have now discovered you and it's totally, maybe not from the TV, and they've started discovering you on Insta?
I don't know that. I'm not very good with my social media data. And also, my social media game, I'm not really on it like some other people. Mm. Like, I really struggle with, I know I should be doing more, I'm walking down the street, talking to the camera, sharing my life
kind of
thing.
Who can be bothered?
And I think I need to be doing this because that would help my following, ratings, or like posting about my life. And I'm very select on what I post about my life in Sweden. My husband's never appeared, my baby's never appeared on there, and because I can't bring myself to do it, you know?
It's a full commitment. I think once you cross that line, it's very hard to go back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can probably at least have that thing whereby you can engage when you want to engage.
Exactly.
You don't have that thing whereby people are giving you a hard time if you haven't posted in 2 days.
Yeah.
Because that's what I find very puzzling about those people that literally do go to that extent, and you know, they do the Insta stories, and they show that everything they do, every meal they eat, every time they walk down the street, or who they're married to. You know, once you've done that, people then feel like, okay, they own you. And and you have to announce, if you're going on a holiday or if you're taking a break, you've got to say, I'm taking a break. Because if you don't, people get really irate about you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, hats off to people who do it. I think that's great.
I admire the commitment because
I think you and I don't have to lose any sleep over that. happening anytime
Although
soon.
Although there was one week when we went on holiday for a week, we had at least 4 tweets of people saying, where's the show this week?
Oh, so, that's good. You put your out of office on.
No, it's hard to do that with a podcast.
Put a little sign up or something like, we'll be back.
Normal
next
service
week.
Will resume.
There's a whole back catalogue to discover.
Yeah. We'll just send in Toni Collette and Zoe Ball to
instead.
Is it just me who feels I don't have a home city anymore?
Well, you're just too glamorous, Rachel.
Yeah,
so that's
too
the problem.
International. So, how many home cities are we talking? London, Paris.
So born and raised in London, right?
Yeah, but then I lived in Germany for a while when I was a kid, went to convent school in South Germany, and then I moved back to London, went to art college in London, and then Paris in my 20s, and now Sweden in my 30s.
Mm. What's next?
I know. But I did want to live in Sydney at one point.
Oh, it was too expensive.
It was going to be the little Paris kitchen, or it was going to be
the little Sydney kitchen.
And yeah,
Paris won out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, if you ever, when you need a potato peeler back in Sydney, let me know.
Okay,
I'll be there. Because that's the thing. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. When I left Sydney, 21, 22, I thought I'd be in London 2 years. It's now about 26 years just gone. And you do, I don't know if you feel this, Rachel, and you've come from Wales, mm-hmm. right? So it's that you complicate things for yourself so much. It was my daughter's birthday and my parents are very upset that they haven't seen her for ages. You know, it's like you don't realise I feel split in two all the time.
Mm.
I'd love to live in Sydney again one day. But as I get older and my daughter gets older, I find that harder to actually visualise.
Mm. I mean, this sounds so weird, but I always say to people that like London's the big love of my life, because I remember coming to London when I was like 4 or 5, and that was it. I loved it. There was something so magical about it, and I had relatives here, and we'd come up all the time. And to be honest, when it came to things like going to university, I mean, I literally applied to every single university in London because I knew it had to be London. There was nowhere else in the world I wanted to be. And, you know, it's just, for me, that magical place. I just love it. It is my home. I'm not from here. I'm very proud of where I come from. I'm very proud to be Welsh. But in the same way that you, Joe, London has been my adopted city. It's my home city. Going back to your initial point, Rachel, I very much, when people say, where are you from? I say, well, I'm not from London, but I feel like I am. This is where I belong. So I believe that sometimes you know, it can be a bit of a lottery. Where you're born is just a bit of a lottery. You can be born anywhere, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's where you're meant to be. So in a weird way, I kind of agree with what you're saying. Mm. Just because you were born in one place doesn't mean that's where you're supposed to spend the rest of your life, you
yeah.
know? But I love it. And I, you know, when I go away on holiday, I enjoy holidays, but I'm never sad to come home. I love coming back to London. So it's quite interesting, I guess. Do you not have that pull then with London so much anymore, or do you have it as much as with Paris or Germany and now Sweden?
My parents, like my mum's from Austria, my dad's from Malaysia, so I grew up with a very mixed home. Especially it was in the 80s, you know, all my friends were eating chips and chicken nuggets, and I got like beef rendang curry and schnitzel and like all these things. And like,
nice.
And I just wanted chips and chicken nuggets or fish fingers, but I had all this international food, which kids nowadays eat, but back in the 80s it was something very different. And so I've lived in so many different places. So for me to go live in another city, it's not anything unusual. And I always feel like I've always got London. When I moved to Paris, I was like, well, if it doesn't work out in Paris, I can go back to London, you know. And with Sweden right now, it works. It's great if you're like, I mean, my husband took 9 months parental leave last year.
Wow.
So it was paid. You get 480 days between parents to use how you want.
Wow.
Well, and I think you've touched on something there that's very interesting. I think more and more people are actually becoming disenchanted with London because it's so expensive and it's so hard. It's not the same city that I came to and I could afford a modest rent and I could still have the odd night out. I worry about London in that way. I worry what's going to happen when people's eyes are open to, well, if I go here, my husband can have paid paternity leave. Yeah. If I go there, I can earn more than a minimum wage. If I go there, I can afford to live in the city.
Yeah,
not
that's true.
Miles and miles out of it. I worry about us.
Mm. I mean, I think London's always going to be London. There's always going to be a draw.
I don't know.
Well, but there's
other cities are springing up as second cities out of necessity.
Yeah.
And I think that I think in the next 10 years, I think it might look very different.
I mean, I get asked all the time being English and in Sweden about Brexit.
No, I bet.
And they're like, well, what's going to happen? And I'm like,
I don't know.
Like,
no one does know.
Yeah.
How much do you hate talking about Brexit? Because there's no fathomable way to explain it,
exactly.
Even to yourself.
Well, you know my new theory is, I think that they should run a second referendum and the question should be, do you wish you'd never heard the word Brexit? Yes or no? Because I genuinely think if most people were now asked, could you just go back to a world where you'd never heard of this word or this option?
Yeah.
And we'll just forget all about it. I genuinely think, because I don't think...
And you know who'd be voting yes on that is Theresa May.
Yes!
Sobbing into her ballot paper.
I hate to say, I mean, apathy is what got us into this mess in the first place, but now I think people are so over it.
Yeah.
They don't care.
It's like a...
Because it's just, you know...
Just dragging on. Yeah. But yeah, I get that all the time in Sweden. You know, what's going on? I'm like...
I moved to Sweden.
Yeah,
in a way, it's nice to know that people still care.
Yeah,
I suppose. It's not just an obsession that we have here. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to say was like you saying, you know, well, if I go to Paris and it doesn't work out, I'll come back. I think a lot of people stay rooted to decisions to stay in various places because they think making a big decision like that is the final decision in their life. And if it goes wrong, it goes wrong catastrophically going forward, when you can always come back.
Yeah. Same with jobs nowadays. People don't have a job for the rest of their life. So I think we have so much flexibility, and actually it can be overwhelming because you're like, well, should I live here? Should I live there? Blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, but if I move there, the grass is always greener. And
you've got to choose a path and just try it out.
Exactly.
That's what I did.
And
look at me now.
Yeah. But also, I hate to say, but you know, you came here, Joe, at a time when there was no FaceTime, there was no internet, you know, there's no email, you know. I mean, I do think we have become a lot more global. You know, you can essentially really be anywhere and still see each other, can't you? I mean, do you find that's a saving grace for you and your family?
My parents live in Austria. I live in Sweden. I work in London most of the time, so all this kind of online working is amazing with Skype and all that technology. Skype is Swedish.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it was founded by
But come
Swedish.
On, Eric.
Nothing they can't do. Meatballs, Volvos, ABBA, and Skype. I mean, what else do you need?
Well, look, I was going to say, what is the one thing you miss about London? Like, is there like one thing?
The energy.
Really?
And the diversity.
Yeah.
Because Stockholm's a very small city, yeah. And it doesn't have the vibrancy and diversity that London has. But which, at the same time, I really embrace because it's nice to have that easygoing pace and all the green space, especially if you've got a kid, you kind of really enjoy having that extra space.
But I think as well, it's not even just about London. Like, you know, you could go to Edinburgh, you go to Glasgow, like, you know, even Belfast and Cardiff. I mean, so many of the UK cities now, the big UK cities, are very diverse. They're very fun. They've got great culture. And I think that's a thing you can't forget. And that's why I guess things like Brexit are a bit of a weird thing, because it makes you forget that this is actually a great country that is all about diversity. And you know, we are culturally rich and diverse.
Yes.
And that's why I then get a bit, because, you know, people tend to then be really down on this country or down on London. And I just think, well, you know, you do forget, you know, it's actually a pretty good place to be in terms of, like, your civil liberties. And, you know, you go to some places in the world and it's actually quite scary.
That's why the royal wedding was amazing. I was watching that from Sweden. My mother-in-law, everybody's watching it. And they were, like, so excited. These Swedes were so excited about the royal wedding.
Royal wedding. The royal wedding, the World Cup performance, and now Mamma Mia 2. Okay. Basically, we need these things in the UK just to basically sort of do out the sort of, you know, Brexit misery.
And we also need nice food and particularly nice cakes.
We do.
And which, so Rachel, for that, Rachel, we thank you.
We thank
bringing
you.
Bringing these into our world.
Yes. Lovely, lovely smiling Rachel and her lovely smiley cakes.
Yes, thank you.
But thank you for joining us, Rachel.
Pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Come every week.
Yes.
I'll bring more cakes and more pre-diabetic friendly cakes.
That could be your next cookbook.
No one's do check out the Little Swedish Kitchen and Rachel at Instagram if you're not one of her bazillion followers already, at Rachel Kooks, KHOOKS.
Yes. Embarrassing.
I love it. I see what you did there.
We like what you did there. Anyway, good luck with the book, Rachel.
Thank you very much.
Thanks again for joining us. Take care.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.